So, main point of this is to talk a bit about Puppet, which is it's a fairly new project. It allows you to manage boxes from a configuration point of view, where you can define configurations and chuck the configurations out of the boxes and tweak them easily. So a really simple example is you can, for example, set up the domain name, and then you change the domain name, and all the files with the domain name in will get altered, and all of the services on the box that use that will be refreshed. So, for example, postfix, which is what I use for email, and the postfix file will be altered, and then postfix will be told to reload the configuration file. I can do that across lots of machines from one central point. What I'm actually going to try and demo is what I'm doing for builds at the moment. So I'll kick it off, because it will take a little bit of time, and I'll talk through what's happening. So I'm just starting this up in VMware, and it's going to boot off the network. It takes a little bit of time to pick up. So this is a virtual machine, which is running on my laptop, and it's going to pick stuff up from the host virtual machine on the laptop. So it's basically starting to load a Linux kernel. I'll talk through this a little bit more shortly, but this is going to be the Linux kernel loading up. And it did actually manage to kernel panic earlier today, which is the first time I've seen it do that.
Is this for VMs, or is it for real machines?
I'm actually using Puppet for real machines, but I'm testing with VMs. So this is
how do you get the real machine
in the BIOS, you can change the boot order. So we've changed the boot order to network boot and then boot off the hard disk.
What's the difference between that then and doing like an install over NFS, which like CentOS and Red Hat have as a kind of,
this is
you can burn a disk and you just shove it into the machine and it goes automatically.
So there's two bits. There's the where are you getting the kernel and the init RD from. So in this case, it's pulling those off the network as well. So these machines could have no CD-ROMs drives in whatsoever. So you can control all of it centrally. As to where most of the install comes from, this is actually pulling it down through HTTP, but it could pull it over NFS as well, if you wanted to. So I've only got one slide. This is going through the Debian installer, basically, at the moment.
Well, what did you say gets pulled out HTTP, the image?
Hopefully this might make life a little bit clearer.
Or TFTP.
Does both. So the client is this. So this is the virtual machine. So I've just told it to reinstall, and the server is basically my laptop at the moment. So when the PC boots, it goes into the BIOS, and there's this stuff called Pixie booting, where it will try and boot from the network. So the BIOS of the PC sends out a DHCP request on the network. My server responded saying, yep, here's an IP address. And it actually says, and I want you to do a TFTP boot, which stands for Trivial File Transfer Protocol. This basically tells this PC, go and download this image. And this image could be anything. In this case, I've told it to download a Linux kerner and a Linux init RAMFS. But other things I've used it for I've used it to download DOS floppy images over the network. So if you have some hardware that you get the firmware upgrade on a DOS diskette, you can do this. You can use this technique to download those over the network. So I've used that in the past when I've got a machine that either hasn't got a floppy image in, floppy disk drive in, or when I've got lots of machines to do it with.
How would you tell the PXE BIOS what you wanted to download and where you wanted to get it from?
That comes back as part of the DHCP. So
Does it use pre-seed shell script?
This does, yes. So, let's do that. That's what I make. Hopefully. Big enough. So, this is my GXCP server configuration file. And I think that might be a bit big.
It is a wee bit.
That's large. Large is a bit better.
Large is
big
enough.
Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. So, some of this stuff's written up on the web in various places. So, I've got various things here. So, the BP is part of the... I'm not quite sure which bits are which. There's like DHCP and TFTP and BootP.
And this is on the host, not the client.
Correct. So I've basically told it, the test machine I've called Puppet, I've basically told it, go and fetch this image to download. So I've said, this is the MAC address of the VM guest. I've said, right, when that machine's asked does its GHCP, give it this address and tell it to download that file, and by default it'll download off this server. I could have told it to download off a different server.
Do you have to specify MAC address, or can you say any PC connected to this network?
You could do absolutely anything. I just like to... I'm tying it down a lot. So that... downloads this thing here, this pixie-linux.0, and that is a very, very small file. He says it's 14k. That's got just enough code to tell the PC, okay, go and have a look for what you're supposed to do. And what this program does, it actually goes and looks inside pixie-linux. So this is all via this protocol called TFTP. It's a bit more low level than what I was going to get into originally. And basically it goes and it tries various things. So it tries the MAC address of the machine as a file name. If it can't find that, it will try the IP address of the... this is all of the guest. So the guest goes and tries to download a file that's got its MAC address. If it can't find that, it will try and download a file that's got its IP address. If it can't find that, it will try and download a file called default. So I set, can't really see it like that. I set it up so the MAC address here points to a file with the name of the box, and then that points that to a file called install. So I've got a fairly simple file here, and basically what it does is include a file called common, and I've told it to have a default option of installs just to make life a bit easier for me. So the main bit here, there we go, is this bit here. So this is what so the PC's booted, it's downloaded pixie-linux.0, pixie-linux has then gone and had a look, downloaded this file, and is now going to do what it says in here. So it actually gives me a list of these things, so I can do an install, or I can boot a rescue image, or I can tell it to boot off the hard disk, but by default it will do the install. So it says, go and download, this is your kernel, and this is your boot string. So it's got a pre-seed file in here, which I'll come back to later. This is for the Debian install, and it's got the initrd, but that's basically what you'll sort of the same thing as you'll see in Grub.
So the URL, is that like something you put in your RAMFS, or that's Debian installer?
So this is part of the Debian installer. The Debian installer...
Is it like from Etch or from...
It's from Etch.
I don't know about the URL.
Yeah, so this is using the Debian installer. This is basically exactly the same as you get off the CD. That's the kernel, and that's the initrd.
And what
does auto equals true do? Auto init equals true, I haven't got to working perfectly yet. It's supposed to do things like tell it this is now going to be an install, to go through the automatic install.
Oh,
go and have a look and go to the box that you've just downloaded the rest of the stuff from and pick up a file called, I can't remember what the default is, something like Debian installer / install.txt as a pre-seed file. So it should avoid me having to type this URL equals stuff in here. It sets a few of the automatic install stuff up. I think it might set priority equals critical as well. Most of the bits you probably don't recognize in there are just to do with the Debian installer. Where the Debian install NSRD looks at the config, looks at the kernel boot parameters and says, oh, you've specified our URL, this is a pre-seed file. If I swap back to that, basically at the end of this, what's happened is it's now just booting as if it's booting off a CD. The Debian installer's looked at that boot parameters, looked at, found this URL string, and this is specifying a pre-seed file. This is a Debian installer specific way to do automatic installs, so it's similar to things like Kickstart in Red Hat and AutoYast for C. So it's downloading a pre-seed file, and I'll show you quickly what mine looks like. It's quite long. There's an appendix in the Debian installer manual that goes through most of this. Let's go in there.
Appendix in where?
The Debian installer manual.
Where would you find that?
Yeah. it's if you just go to debian.org and have a documentation, it's got the install guide, and I think it's Appendix A. It says Debian preceding stuff, and it goes through quite a lot of these options and what they mean, what they do for you. So this just basically supplies just a large list of defaults to something called debconf, which is Debian's configuration tool. So I say things like, I speak English, British English. See, there's loads of comments in here. I've changed the DHCP timeout. I've told it use Ethernet 0 to boot from. Otherwise, if there's lots of Ethernet cards in the machine, it will sit there saying, which card do you want? I always want the first one. And it's got various, most of this lot's commented out. So I say here, for example, go and download from ftpukdebian.org, things like that. It's got a large list of things in here of the defaults. Most of it in here is comments.
Are you doing work with Drupal?
Yes. So at the end, there's two extra bits you can do. There's two hooks, basically, you can do in the Debian installer. The first one gets run right at the start of the install, and the second one gets run right at the end of the install. What I use the first one for is I actually have to overwrite the Debian partitioning tools because I want to do something quite complicated, which out of the box Debian won't do automatically, which is setting up software RAID and LVM, and you can't do that just with the pre-seed file normally, so I have to do a trick in here to get that to work. And the end stuff basically runs Puppet. So come down here, we've basically booted the Linux kernel, we're now going through the Debian installer, which is automatically putting packages on and that sort of thing. And then right at the end of the install, it will now go and do Puppet. So I'm not sure whereabouts it is up to. We'll have a look. So I should explain, there is a problem here. I recently upgraded various bits, and when I was doing some testing, there's something's going wrong. I'm not quite sure whereabouts it is. So this has failed to do the last step. So I'll have to run that manually, I'm afraid. In this case, this is all Puppet uses X509 certificates to check security, and what's happened is the Puppet client has generated a certificate and sent it over to the server, and it's waiting for me to accept it. I haven't accepted it in time. And when I actually do this, normally I have a script to go and watch it and accept it for me. So I just need to approve this certificate here. Well, it's a really nasty feeling of forgetting one parameter on that. Puppet by default uses lots of horrible coloured text, which is quite nice when you're looking at the screen, but probably isn't very readable here, I'm afraid. It's normally a lot quicker than this. I had an issue at home which I thought I'd resolved down to there not being any reverse DNS, but it doesn't seem to be purely that. What's happening here is Puppet is talking from the client to the server. And first of all, it's retrieving various facts. Puppet has this idea of facts which tell you something about the machine you're on. So IP address, what distribution it's running. You can add your own in there. For example, I have one for what RAID it's doing, what RAID cards are on there, things like that. What the mail server address is. You can put pretty much anything in there you like. So first of all, it's pulling those down. It's real life, it does this, it runs through all of this lot in a few seconds. Apologise for the speed. Then what it does is it goes through a manifest, and which tells it what files to alter. You can do templating, and you can define what programs are kicked when things change. So I'll leave that running in the background at the moment. I've split mine into various pieces, so if I have a look at the email, for example, I've got, this is how I've done my email setup. So I say things like, when I tell you I want to install the mail server, I want you to install the postfix package. I want you to make sure there's a service, so it's basically the program called postfix, make sure it's running, make sure it's marked to run when it comes up, and by the way, before you do that a lot, you must make sure that you've put the postfix package on, because that's supplying sort of the etc. init.d files.
Haven't you done this in the seed already?
The seed, yeah, you can do some of this stuff in the seed. The reason why I'm doing pretty much all of it in Puppet is because the pre-seed will install a box. What you then have to do to look after the box for the next 4 years, you can't just reinstall the box every time you want to change something. So with Puppet, I can manage it for years without having to do reinstalls. And this will keep all of the files in sync across all the boxes. That's why I decided to use it.
You wrote this yourself?
Puppet, no. I did the config file, but Puppet itself is a... it's a program from a company called Reductive Labs. It's a guy called Luke Keynes who runs that. So it's just a useful tool. It's fairly new, and the documentation is not as good as it should be. So the learning curves can be a little steep, but it's great now. I can go in and can make changes across so many boxes very, very easily. So I say things like, make sure there's a postfix directory, which it needs. I can then go and say things like, the main PlaceFix configuration file that is actually a template now. And got mail name here and various other bits. I've actually got some extra ones on here, so I've got different templates when it's a server that, for instance, sort of a central server that other machines can talk to. I've got actually all my anti-spam in here as well now, so it's setting up all of the anti-spam for me at home. So, for example, on that it installs a Mavis and all the Spam Assassin and Razor and so on and so forth, and actually everything off there. So I've got a config file that says what to do for all the anti-spam. And these are all done through templates, so so just to pick a few things up, for example, I've got things like my host name is, just put in the fully qualified domain name in there of the machine, put in the domain here, put in any mail servers if you're doing smart host, relay host sort of stuff, things like that. And I can do all of this lot. So here, for example, it will put in the first. If this box knows to talk to various other smart hosts, relay hosts, whatever you want to call them, it'll put the first one in as relay host. And if there's a second one, it'll put it in as the fallback relay. And I've done this basically for the whole config. I can then go and change if I pick this up from somewhere slightly differently, I wanted to pull stuff out of an Excel sheet basically, so I actually defined various things in a CSV file, but I can go in and I can edit things like the domain name here, and it will ripple through all of the config files for all the services on the box and update them all.